Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasion.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
Just wanted to tell Ty, I appreciate how much you know about the Razorbacks. I mean, you're very knowledgeable for as young as you are.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorbacks.
Got my keg in the freezer. We're ready to get this thing rolling and go home, baby.
First one to go to the phone lines and welcome in JW, who's in London, Arkansas. JW, you're on the Morning Rush.
Hey, good morning, y'all. Hey, I'm looking forward to Saturday's game. I expect us to win. I expect us to beat Missouri. And I expect us to get some good national attention when we play Alabama. That's my expectations for the next three games. But that's not really why I called. I have been a listener of that afternoon talk show for 25 plus years. But you have become my new go-to show. I'm an early riser, and I know there are other people in the same way who work for a living who are just kind of early risers by nature. And I love the way that you treat your callers. You got a great cadre of advertisers, which I expect to increase. And I want you just to keep on doing what you all been doing. And thank you. You brighten my morning every day.
Well, you brightened ours with those kind words, JW, and we appreciate you calling in from London Town there.
All right. Take care, y'all.
All right. You know where London is?
It's in.
Any guess?
Russellville?
You are right on the money, my man. Okay. Right there near the nuclear plant.
I've tried since doing this show, and since we have a variety of callers, not only within our listening areas on terrestrial radio, but outside of that, I've tried to be better about picking up where certain people are calling in at. So JW, and again, that's and what his comments and his what those are. We feel the exact same way. Mm-hmm. It's on our end too. So we couldn't do this show without all of our listeners, whether you listen on radio, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, hitthatline.com. We really appreciate it, and that's why I get up at 4:15 every single morning.
Exactly right. And if it wasn't for you guys out there listening, headed to work, starting your routine, whatever it is you're doing at this time of the day, if you weren't listening, he mentioned our great sponsors, we wouldn't have these sponsors, because they know we have the best listeners in the business. That's why they want to be a part of our show. So it's a great hand-in-hand deal, but it starts with you guys out there. So, JW, thank you.
Absolutely. All right, quick any headlines for you on the Morning Rush. We mentioned this a little while ago. Felipe Franks, no complications with his left hand. He's ready to go. He's practiced every single day this week. That's what Sam Pittman said yesterday. So you're confident about the starting quarterback. And again, we would both be under the impression if you're going to name him, you're going to say he's practiced every day this week, that would at least lead us to believe that Felipe is not one of the guys in suspect when it comes to participating against LSU tomorrow.
Yes, but if I'm Bo Pelini, I'm going to test that left hand if given the opportunity. Because if it's a deep bone bruise or whatever happened, that doesn't heal up in just a few days. Now, they can deaden that thing up, rub some of that numbing cream on it, whatever. You'll know if he comes out with a glove on the left hand that, hey, that thing's not back to 100%. Yeah, I expect Felipe Franks to play. I think the anxiety would be leaking out of the building up there to a noticeable point. We would know a little bit more if Franks wasn't going to play.
I remember back in the series between the Boston Celtics and the Detroit Pistons back in the 80s, Kevin McHale had a broken foot during the 1987 season, and Bill Laimbeer and Rick Mahorn used to step on that sucker as much as possible just to make sure it wasn't okay. But, I mean, the LSU football team's not going to intentionally try to hit his left hand, but as you mentioned, they are going to come after Felipe. I believe I'm correct in the statistic that LSU leads the SEC in blitzes. Bo Pelini likes to be aggressive, play that man-style defense, and he can do that with Derek Stingley Jr. locking up the best wide receiver. I would expect him to be on Treylon Burks the majority of the football game. That means Mike Woods, that we've talked about Trey Knox, we've talked about Tyson Morris. Other guys are going to have to step up if the best cornerback in college football is going to be on your best wide receiver.
That means Ricky Stromberg. That means Myron Cunningham. That means Bo Limmer. I mean, just keep growing across that offensive line, have to step up. Mm-hmm. Because if there was an offensive line you really wanted to test early with pressures and blitzes and twists and stunts, it would be Arkansas, right? It would be the probably one of the more least experienced or least proven, at least, offensive lines that I think has improved. I think Sam's talked about that. I mean, no one knows more about O-line play than Sam Pittman. He's the guru. I think they're proud of the improvement they made, but they're still not on the level of the elite teams in this league. So, hey, if there's a team you feel like you can get to the quarterback, it would be at Arkansas.
No, that's a great point by you. And speaking of Sam Pittman, he was joking with the Arkansas media yesterday. Apparently he had glass doors in his office, and he got brand new red doors that he can shut and keep private, so there's not people always walking by and like waving at him and stuff.
Did he get one of those automatic openers like Saban's
where
got?
You click on it and it opens up? I don't know if he got that. I don't know if they're nice wooden doors, if they're automatic. That's just what he told us yesterday. He did not go into detail. He just said he got red doors. So that was one of the tidbits that came out of his press conference yesterday. One of the cool things that came out of the SEC office yesterday was Desi Sills, second team All-SEC as voted on by the coaches. You think about his improvement from freshman to sophomore year, doubled up his points, doubled up his minutes, doubled up his three-pointers made, and doubled up his rebounding, especially down the stretch. He couldn't miss. Like, he was lethal down the stretch for this Arkansas basketball team. Started off, 2 for 26 from three, something like that. It was an atrocious shooting percentage. And then something clicked, and
coming
he got
bench.
Hot. Yeah, coming off the bench is a big attribute of that. So that, again, well, that aspect makes me curious to see if he's talked to Coach about possibly wanting to come off the bench, staying in that role, or if he's going to be elevated to the starting role. But cool to see Desi is the only Arkansas Razorback mentioned on the coaches All-SEC teams.
When you've lost four of your five starters and roughly 80% of your scoring, who else would be on those teams? I mean, it'd be hard to put Moses Moody on one of these teams and when you've got a bunch of guys that haven't played any minutes yet.
So. See, a lot of times, though, there's a couple of freshmen that they just automatically assume are going to be good, and they throw them in there. Moses did not make that list, and it was interesting to see, again, Desi the only one listed, but to your point, it's valid.
Yeah.
No Mason Jones, no Isaiah Joe, no Jimmy Witt, no one who had the majority of your scoring output from last year back. Desi really the only one, and I think Desi is, by this accolade, is shown that he has a lot of respect from SEC basketball coaches. Not the biggest guy, but just plays like a tough SOB. When he goes to the rim, he goes with a reckless abandon, really got his shooting stroke going last year, physical on defense, smart defensive player. So I was happy for Desi to see that yesterday.
Yeah, fun conversation with Eric Musselman yesterday on the show. It was in the 7 o'clock hour, so if you were headed into work this time yesterday and you didn't get to hear it, go check out yesterday's podcast. It's available at hitthatline.com or subscribe to any of the ways that you can listen to our podcast. Fun stuff that we talked about the NBA draft a lot early because that was obviously one of the prime conversations yesterday with Isaiah Joe being drafted 49th overall and then Mason Jones signing a contract being undrafted with the Houston Rockets. Talked some about his team. I pointed out, and to me it was the most interesting thing about this year's team, is he revealed the fact that the majority of his team is, he has not, as head coach, gotten a positive COVID test and contracted COVID, but the majority of his team has went through that process and come through it. And we know that once you've gone through that, it's a 90-day window where you don't have to test anymore. But what it means when you got smaller rosters is he's not going to be in a situation where they say, well, we can't play. You know, that's what I take from that conversation.
That's what
when
I
the
take
majority
well.
Of his team is already, and a big part of his staff has already been through COVID. We hadn't really had a big update on that in a while. So tells me that if the opponent can play, Arkansas is going to be ready to play.
Last basketball nugget for you in your quick hitting headlines. The Arkansas Razorbacks will take on Mississippi Valley State in their home season opener this upcoming Wednesday. 6:30 will be the game time for that.
Yep, and a lot of these games early. There's one or two that are on SEC Network, most of them on SEC Network Plus. So get your streaming device set up, and if none of that works for you, right here on the radio, you can hear all of those games right here where you're listening right now.
Did either of you guys watch the Seattle Seahawks and the Arizona Cardinals last night? Kyler Murray and the Russell Wilson duo?
Nope, did not.
It was quite entertaining. You guys missed a battle. Russell Wilson
Go ahead.
I was going to say, Russell got the better of Kyler last night, but watching those two guys go at it is just a lot of fun, both in the MVP conversation. Kyler and company got the better of the Seahawks earlier this year, but it was actually the Seattle Seahawks defense last night that came up big. Carlos Dunlap, former Florida Gator, got his second sack against Kyler in the final Arizona drive, but a big win for Seattle last night as they edged out the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah. No, I fell asleep about 8-something last night, only to find myself wide awake about 1:30. So
that's the worst.
That is the worst. I was reading, I don't know, this all last thing I know, I was reading the note package you sent over, and the next thing I know is 1:30 in the morning.
So. Yeah, last night I came back late and then was watching the, and I say late, it was 9:15, 9:30, and I was watching the game and then sent the stuff out late just because I was fiddling while I was like watching whatever. But it's a fun game and you get a good NFL slate. Who the Cowboys play? They got the Washington football team next week. Who the Cowboys got this weekend?
You had to ask me that.
Well, you're the big Cowboy guy. You should know without even checking.
Hang on.
I got a question.
Arkansas plays LSU. I don't even have
to look.
What
the hell are you guys coming to me for?
Because you're the Cowboy guy.
I got to question you on stuff. I asked you who the defensive coordinator was.
Mike Nolan.
Last time I asked it, I asked you. Yeah, I would think you know this game this weekend.
You know? What are you coming at me for all of a sudden? God almighty.
Who are the Cowboys going to lose to? Okay, they lose to the Vikings.
So they're
going to
get Dalvin Cook this weekend.
Get that little smirk off your face every time. Time you talk about this.
Former Florida State Seminoles. So
when is the next time the Cowboys will win?
That's a good
this Sunday.
We don't have next year's schedule yet. That is the answer.
Sunday.
Is it in Jerry World or is it
it's at Minnesota.
No.
The 3:30 on Fox.
No chance. So that will be on one TV for us, and then the Chargers-Jets game will be on one team for us.
Boy, that's real quality football. Chargers and Jets,
hey,
man.
You know the difference in that? The Los Angeles Chargers is going to win their game, and
that's
the
fine.
Other team in
that's
the Dallas Cowboys.
One more game than the Jets have.
What did those TVs do to make y'all mad to put the Jets on one?
Well, man.
Here's our line of thinking. So I'm in the Survivor League. Jenkins and I talk about it every week. There are 10 guys left that have the picks, and I'm going with the Chargers over the Jets this week. So excited to see what they can do. Hopefully Justin Herbert with his new, have you seen Herbert's new haircut?
I have.
He went from,
quite impressive.
He went from like my kind of flow, like the long hair to, he looks like, who's the King of the Hill son? Is it Bobby? Is that his name? He looks like Bobby from King of the Hill now, Tom. It's quite funny. But yeah, those are your quick hitting headlines here on the Morning Rush.
I felt attacked this morning. Goodness gracious.
It's Friday, man.
I can handle him, but you coming at me like that.
Well, I just piling on. 15 yards on me for a late hit out of bounds or something. All right, we're brought to you by Baxter Regional Medical Center. I'm sorry, buddy.
No, it's okay.
Baxter Regional Medical Center is ready to see you and your family again, and they're going to do it safely. I know with all the concerns going on with rising numbers right now, you want to make sure that everything is safe. Safe surgeries, safe procedures, safely seeing their patients across all service lines. And Baxter Regional is taking every necessary precaution to keep you safe. Their services, and they might look a little bit different right now, but the commitment to high-quality, compassionate care remains the same at Baxter Regional. Hey, learn more about the extra precautions at Baxter Regional Medical Center online at baxterregional.org. That's baxterregional.org. Welcome back to Baxter Regional Medical Center in Mountain Home.
Before we get into this Felipe Franks and Kendall Briles conversation, I think Justin Herbert's new advertiser needs to be proactive. He still looks like he's like 18 years old with that acne.
Tommy, that's what he looked like before.
He sweats more than most of us, probably.
That is true. But
he keeps a helmet on, and I would imagine that the volume of perspiration he has compared to the rest of us is higher amounts.
He's also probably much richer than we are too.
Well, there's no question about that.
He does
operate in a different bracket.
I was going to say, that is not a question. That is a fact. Going to the phone lines. Welcome in Rod on I-40. Rod, you're on the Morning Rush.
Good morning, guys. Y'all doing all right?
Man, we are good. It's Football Friday here.
When is the next time the Cowboys will win?
We don't
I'm
have
to call Nostradamus on that one and get back to you.
Yeah, we don't have next year's schedule.
No, I left my stop calendar home, too. So I doubt that.
They have Washington next week, so there's a good possibility.
Yeah, that'll work. Washington's terrible.
Now, they played well. The Cowboys played well against the Steelers, and I think that surprised a lot of people.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Still lost.
So, LSU is a blitzing team, are they?
That's what the numbers say. They like to put more pressure on the opponent and blitz more than any other team in the league. Now, that hasn't necessarily worked out well for them either because you bring the blitz and that opens up the middle of the field. The question is, can this offensive line hold up long enough for Kendall Briles to put the plays in that Felipe Franks and his receivers can take advantage of?
Yeah, that was my question. How well does that work out for them? I mean, what's their percentage on sacks and stopping plays with that blitz? Because that might not work out well with our team. LSU, they're really suspect. I mean, they've really not done that well this year at all. So, and it coming to our place, that might not work out well for them either. If it was their place, I'd say, yeah, okay, all right. I can. Weird things happen at LSU. Not as weird as Florida, but they do happen down there. But I believe that they're going to have to bring their A game to take out the Razorbacks this time because this isn't last year's team. Definitely.
LSU gets 2.8 sacks per game. That's third in the league, as Ty said a little bit ago, 31st in the country. So.
And they, like you mentioned, I mean, they'll get after you. And Bo Pelini's been known for that over his years. Rob, we appreciate the call this morning. I hope you're right about LSU having to bring their A game to beat Arkansas come tomorrow at 11.
Now, on the other side of that, Arkansas allows 3.29 sacks per game.
Not ideal.
Where do you think that ranks in the SEC?
I would probably say it's 14. 13 or 14.
Which one?
I'm going to say Vanderbilt's the worst, so
nope,
13.
You'd be wrong.
It's the 14. Worst.
Ugh, Arkansas sacks allowed 14, 111 nationally.
Okay, so while that hasn't been great to points this season, I'll tell you what has been good these last three games. Arkansas being able to run the football. You look at what they've done on offense, particularly in the third quarter against Tennessee, which you're hoping can be Kendall Briles' offense here in Fayetteville. 200-plus rushing yards the last three games. And Sam talked with the Arkansas media yesterday. He said, Felipe is doing what we thought he could do. He's been great. And you look at his statistic. Get this. Felipe Franks has the opportunity and the chance to hold the highest single-season completion percentage in Razorback football history. Do you know who holds that record?
Ask me that again.
Highest single season completion percentage in Razorback history. I'd be shocked if you got.
Why do I want to say Brandon Allen?
That's a good guess. It's Kevin Scanlon.
Okay.
So, and I think I'm pronouncing his name right. But
yeah, you are.
So Scanlon holds that, and Felipe is currently beating him right now. I mean, you look at some of these like 15 for 19s. 22s or 22 of 28s. He has been really accurate. Now, listen, I'm right there with you.
You probably should go back to an era where, you know, you threw it 12 times a game or 14. Now, you know, in Grovey's era, there was a brief time where you had some air raid offense, but for the most part, it was ground and pound for many years. So you could have a high completion rate back in those days.
And that's what I think makes Felipe's that much better. Now, he's not chucking the ball 50, 60 times a game. It's been a little less than that, but he has been really accurate and made some really good decisions to this point. And that's what I think you should be excited about as an Arkansas fan, the potential of this Kendall Briles offense. You've seen the last three games. Can it continue? We'll see if it does against LSU. 877-377-6963. Go to our residential Tennessee Volunteers fan going out to Deer, Arkansas, to Craig. Craig, you're on the Morning Rush.
Morning, fellas. How
are
you all today?
Man, we're good. How are you dealing with your Vols this late in the season, man?
Well, you know, that's part of why the previous caller, I want to reiterate what he said. I used to listen to Afternoon Only. I wish y'all would get an afternoon sports talk show on this station because then I could listen morning and afternoon. But y'all have become more of my go-to, and I'm not even kidding when I say that. That's not why I call, though. I like this station. It comes in clear where I live. I just wish you had an afternoon talk format that had to do with sports. But anyhow, back to Tennessee. Look, I don't hold many grudges in sports, you know. But if there's ever one, and I'm not even, you gotta understand, I'm a Tennessee fan primarily. But if there's one guy I'm going to pull against, I don't care if he had to play Saddam Hussein, I'm pulling against Chad Martin, okay? And I'm not even making that up. So this week, they play my ball.
And Hussein and so is I'm, dead.
Yeah, he is dead. But I heard he buttered in the last election. Anyhow, back to where we were. So this week I've got that double axe of Tennessee playing Chad Morris's offense. I'm afraid we're going to make Bo Nix look like a Heisman candidate. But all he's got to do is just throw slants. We hadn't covered one since Eisenhower was president, so it doesn't really matter there. And to the Arkansas game, I'll say this. Arkansas is playing for something, and I think LSU's thrown in the towel. I really believe it. I don't think Orgeron, I think they're we want it all. If we can't have it all, we're going to go home. You know, we're going to take our toys and go to the house. So I think LSU's packed it in. So it would not surprise me to see the Hogs win big. I hope they do, because I'm not particularly an LSU fan either. But you know, it's going to be an interesting weekend. I wonder how in 10 years we're going to look back on this season, because I don't even know if we're going to, you know, we'll just see what happens. But anyhow, that's my take. I'm torn having to play Chad Morris, if it were anybody playing, maybe other than, anybody. I would pull against Auburn, because the guy saying when he played y'all that it was personal blew my mind. After what he did to the program, decimated the program, left, and is still taking money, and then says the game is personal. Are you kidding me? I'm done ranting about that. Appreciate having a good morning sports talk show I can talk sports about. Y'all have a good day, guys.
Bye. Hey, Craig, real quick before we let you go, there was this caller that we used to take. His name is Cosby Cattleman out of Knoxville at the old radio station I worked at, and he loved himself some George Dickel Tennessee whiskey. Now, have you ever had George Dickel Tennessee whiskey, Craig?
Does a fat baby have gas? Look, man, I had to give up drinking a few years back because I developed an allergy to it. I kept breaking out in handcuffs, so I decided that I better lay it down. But trust me, when Chris Fableton sings about Tennessee whiskey, he's talking about me. I've had plenty of George Dickel, and Jack Dadden, his brother Jack, is made right there in Lynchburg. So. Anyhow, have a good day, guys.
Craig, that's the best call we've taken all week. My good, I am so glad I asked that question. Oh, man. Oh man.
He needs to lay off Ruskin and Zach, but they're there to make you laugh in the afternoon.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
No, I don't feel good about COVID. I think everybody's looking for an answer, and I'll give you the answer. We're going to play Saturday as of right now. We're going to play. We have a test that we took today that gets back tomorrow. I'm going to just tell you the truth. We're running thin, and we want to play the game, but you have to have adequate numbers to play the game, and we are thin. If we have a good test tomorrow, then by golly, we're going to play the game. We want to play the game. We have not talked to our players 1 second about not playing the game because we want to play the game. They want to play. And so as long as our numbers will allow us to play, that's what we're going to do. Are we thin? Yes.
Clay, Sam comes across as a straightforward guy when it comes to speaking about this. So when you hear him say, "We're thin," how concerned should Arkansas fans be about the depth of this football team tomorrow?
Well, I think that anytime you lose players with this team, depth is a concern. So it was a concern when they have Jalen Catalan out. It's a concern if, you know, you lose one tight end. You just don't have SEC quality two deep, three deep on this team. And you know, it's not hard to see it when you see players go out that they take a dip. And it's been like that for several years. So, yeah, I mean, it's however you want to say it. I mean, one thing I'm not concerned about is that the players that play will be well coached and they'll play hard. And what you know is the other teams are fighting through the same situations. And LSU did, you know, for, you know, whether they've got all their players back, we don't know. But it's not a good situation, and frankly, it might get worse. Yeah. Today, we may hear, you know, that they've lost a few more players. It won't take too many more for them not to be able to play.
Yeah.
Because it is exactly as the head coach, you said it, he calls it the way he sees it. He says they're thin, and right now they won't play.
Yeah, two things on this discussion I think we always, you know, need to make sure gets pointed out. Just because you don't have players doesn't mean they all tested positive, the ones that missed.
No, very few did, what I understand. One or two.
Yeah, you could have one or two positives amongst your staff or players, but the contact tracing is what can take out multiple players. And then the other part is that the conference has a standard of 53 scholarship players that includes 7 O-linemen, 1 quarterback, and 4 defensive linemen for you to go onto the field. And then if you can't meet that, the commissioner has to give you approval to play without that standard. So I think those are important things because people say you don't have enough players after the testing. Well, that didn't mean you had 10, 12, 15 players test positive. What it could have meant is one or two tested positive, but because of the contact tracing, it knocked out a number of other people around your football team.
Yeah, it normally what it'll do if you have a guy actually test positive, and they've lost players this year, one or two here or there. They had Bo Limmer and Noah Gatlin out last week, and I don't think either one of them had COVID. They were, you know, they were contact tracing. So when you do have a player that has it, then normally there's going to be a few more go with him because of the proximity. And for instance, there's a situation where roommates are out. So, you know, their roommate has it. Mm. Well, then they're going to be out for contact tracing. There's no way around it. Now, what they do to prevent contact tracing from wiping out, you know, an entire room, you know, meeting room of one position, is that they spread them out in the meeting and they don't let them sit within 6 foot. So that does not count. And they don't let the players be around each other more than 6 feet and any of the other things they do to prevent contact tracing from just wiping out the whole team. So, you know, it's a little bit of gamesmanship. You know, you say, well, we didn't have them very close. But the SEC will say if they're roommates, then they're out. There's not any other way to get around that one.
Yeah. Clay, when you look at this football game, we've been going back and forth with Tommy and I, callers, texters, about the opinion. Has it changed since this? And I texted you Saturday night last week, and I thought Arkansas would win this game 38-21. I was really confident about that. I have yet to change a prediction since what I've texted you this season, but I probably won't by the end of the show, but I'm definitely a lot less confident in this football team tomorrow. Not because of anything LSU has done this week, but just because of the potential of missing players in this Arkansas game come tomorrow, Clay.
Well, I haven't heard anything that makes me think Arkansas isn't going to win, so there's my answer to that. You know, it ain't going to be easy, but I never thought it was. I mean, I didn't think that was a walkover game. LSU's got talent. They're inexperienced, and they have new coaches that are trying to learn what their guys can do based on their inexperience. That's a tough combination. And a lot of people made fun of Bo Pelini to start the year when they played Mississippi State, but he wasn't sure based on the limited amount of time he'd been with them as far as scrimmaging. They're new players, losing everybody but 3 on defense, what they could do. And, you know, I think that also I'm sure Ed Orgeron said, hey, we'd like to play man and be able to blitz. So that's what, you know, that's what he did. And they didn't have that. But what I'm saying is I don't think LSU got significantly better as far as suddenly those guys, those inexperienced players, what they needed was to play games, and they didn't get that over the last two games, 2 weeks when they're open, 3 weeks to prepare for Arkansas. They weren't preparing for Arkansas. In fact, they weren't practicing because of their low numbers. Mm-hmm. Now, they've got a worse situation than Arkansas when COVID hits. They only have 68 scholarship players, so to get to 53 is really easy for them. Losing all the juniors that they lost and a few other defections, they got, they only have 68 on scholarship. They have self-imposed some penalties that will go forward that are going to keep them from getting to 85 for several years.
It's going
to
be
so this is not anything close to what we've seen as far as LSU.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Hour number three of the Morning Rush. Going to the phone lines and welcoming SEC Network's Matt Stinchcomb, who will be on call for the Arkansas-LSU game tomorrow at 11 a.m. Matt, good morning. Thanks so much for making some time for us, man.
Man, happy to do it. Fired up for some ball. Fingers crossed we're going to see it.
You're an All-American at Georgia. You won an award for one of the best SEC offensive blockers. So, Matt, really the last couple of games, Arkansas has got it going on offense, and that offensive line, they've had 200-plus rushing yards the last three games. Just watching film from your perspective as a former offensive lineman, what have you seen from this offensive line the last few games?
I think it's helped to have that Cleary kid back and kind of knock the rust off. I think that's partially been a part of it. So guard to guard, you're better when he's in there. I think Rakeem Boyd finally kind of rounding into form has certainly been a shot in the arm as well, because Traylon Smith, who's kind of was the mainstay, the drumbeat of that run game for the bulk of the first half, the majority of the first half of the season. And now, Rakeem Boyd starting to kind of find his sea legs. I think it's, we did y'all's A&M game, and it really did seem as if he started to come on. Had a good game that game. So that you got multiple contributors in the ground game. Having Cleary healthy up front certainly helps quite a bit. And time. This is something that offensive football takes time to certainly settle in. Now, this year is so strange, and I still can't quite put my finger on why defenses have struggled as mightily as they have this year. But for sure, offensive line play and typically rushing, it's you can't simulate that. There's not a 7-on-7 league out there that you can just kind of go out in the parking lot with a football and run routes. It doesn't work in the ground game. You got to block. These backs got to see cuts. You got to learn how to work combinations with the guy next to you. So because of all that, it takes time, it takes reps, it takes live reps. You got to actually have somebody resisting you. You can't just go out there and run routes versus air. And so I think that's part of it. When you see where this run game's starting to emerge, it makes sense from a timeline standpoint.
When you look at Arkansas's numbers, they're last in the league on sacks allowed. We know Bo Pelini's going to send pressure. They're like third in the league on getting sacks. So what gives tomorrow? How does Arkansas block this up, or will they be able to block up LSU? Because I think that's one of the – I think it's one of the keys in the game. Do you think that's one of the obvious keys in the game that will decide the outcome?
Well, it can. If you find yourself in third and obvious passing downs a lot, then that's going to be a difficulty. There's no doubt. Felipe Franks this year is mobile enough. He's not a great runner, but in a lot of ways, he kind of reminds me of Ben Roethlisberger. He's more mobile than Ben. But a lot of tacklers just kind of slide off of him. He'll find a way to just muddy his way through the pocket, scramble forward, probably stagger. Usually he's not making just sick cuts and breaking ankles out there. He usually ends up falling forward, but he's a big dude. Falls forward, you get 3 or 4 yards. Sometimes it's enough for a first. Sometimes it's enough to make it maybe a go for it on a fourth down scenario or a third and manageable. But I think the key more than anything else will be, we hear a lot about first down efficiency in this offense. You want to get going on first down so that you can open things up, jump into your tempo game, get that first down. I think more than anything, it's see if you can't get it to third and manageable where the playbook isn't so obvious, where you're not thinking about a 5 or 7 step drop, where you can get the ball out or you can take a shot, but that the playbook's more available to you versus, you know, 3rd and 6+, 3rd and 7+. I think everybody in the stadium's got a pretty good idea of what's coming, and you've got some pretty good rushers. The Ojulari kid for LSU, who's really coming on, good little football player. He can pressure the passer all on his own. So you definitely don't want to find yourself in those scenarios versus this defense.
As you've talked with the coaches around the league and preparing for your games, I mean, not just with Sam Pittman, but just, you know, all of them this year, you know, I can't imagine the stress level. It's got to be exponentially greater this year, just trying to deal with the contingencies. And I'm thinking about Sam this week and not knowing what team he's going to be able to put out on the field because of contact tracing and the COVID numbers that's led to what we believe is going to be a loss of certain players. What's that been like going through those conversations you've had, and how are the coaches as a whole dealing with that this year in your assessment?
Yeah, they've done a lot of it. Well, we open up our questions. The standard opener is who's available this week. Let's get our depth chart right. Who can we expect to see? Who won't we see that we otherwise would have expected to see? Because now more than ever, usually, you know, in the past, you could watch the previous week's game, you read some of the press conference transcripts, watch a couple of them, and the coaches will address injuries. And some of them are pretty cagey and others aren't. But you have a pretty good idea. You could specifically ask about certain players. You can't do that now. Now it just has to be, you got to kind of carpet bomb it, which is just a wide open, well, what do we got this week, coach? I mean, who's going to be out there? Let us know who's going to be doing what. Can you tell us who might not be out there so that we're not going, my gosh, why are they starting so-and-so? Mm-hmm. Well, it's because the guy got contact traced or tested positive or whatever. These coaches, though, a lot of them, they did a lot of this as much as they could anyway in the preseason, cross-training guys, especially when you think about interchangeable positions, guys playing inside-outside linebacker, guys playing inside-out on in the secondary, safeties and corners, you know, safeties cross-training at nickel. Some of them, if they're a good size, they spend more time in the box. Maybe you rep more sub-packages on defense where you've got extra DBs, but they're playing against regular personnel on offense, just because if you're down a couple of backers, maybe you get you find yourself living with more DBs out there and asking a safety or a big body DB to play in the box. That's kind of the measures that they've had to take. And we know that they've got guys out there playing sometimes on game day that haven't gotten a ton of preparation because they had to be held out of practice or were isolated due to contact tracing or positive tests as well, but they just can't afford to not have them out there on game day. So their preparation, you know, we're seeing guys out there that are playing that aren't at their best simply because they weren't capable of preparing the way they normally would have. But the teams are saying, look, we'd rather have an unprepared this guy versus whoever the inexperienced or maybe deficient backup is, that was able to practice all week just because he's that good. That's happening across the league.
Matt Stinchcomb, former Georgia Bulldog and current SEC Network analyst here on the Morning Rush. Matt, two guys you really like on the Arkansas defense, Jonathan Marshall and Jalen Catalon. We'll start with the trenches first. Jonathan Marshall, he's second, I believe, in the SEC in pressures when it comes to getting the quarterback. What have you seen from him, and how much has he improved his draft stock heading into the end of college football season?
Well, what I see is power. That guy's got some serious low-end torque. He just kind of Tonka trucks guys off the line of scrimmage. And he's not a real elusive guy. You know, he's not a super quick, kind of twitchy guy that's just hard to get your hands on him. It's the opposite. It's do you really want to tangle with this dude? Because he's out in there just throwing bodies around. I mean, physically demonstrating how strong he really is, and I understand he's probably the strongest guy on the team. He plays like it. He moves the line of scrimmage backwards. He takes on double teams really well, and then at the position that they ask him to play, which is oftentimes a head-up nose tackle alignment where you can get a double team from either direction. But more than likely, you are going to get a double team. It's not easy taking on 600-plus pounds of guys that are trying to make you go somewhere you don't want to go and winning. He does that a lot. It's been really impressive. He's a handful, there's no doubt. He's not a huge guy, but he plays much bigger than his stature would imply, that's for sure. And Catalon, I mean, what can you say? As early as he is in his career, not only a really good tackler around the football, he makes that defense right a lot of times. That's the role of the safety, is to fix whatever the 10 guys in front of them is doing, and to see if, in fact, you know, hey, you know, I'm actually supposed to run the alley right here and run support, but we blew it and we lost contain, and so now I'm going to be the contain player. I mean, he's that kind of a football player, and you watch him make those kind of plays a lot. Really aware, and seems like he's got great ability as well. And you combine those two at safety, and you've got a really high productive football player. I think that's what we've seen out of Catalon, and the conference has recognized him, I think, a couple of times for some of his performances, rightfully so.
Matt, when you look at this LSU football team, all the pieces they lost, not only players but coaches as well, Arkansas opened as a 3-point favorite, and they were a 42-point underdog last year, and that's the largest betting line shift known in the history of college football. Have you ever seen a team coming off a national championship that has a drop-off like we've seen from LSU this year?
You got to go way back. And there's a few instances. Although, and we've got a graphic that's built around that. A lot of them, I think, happened in the 30s and 40s. Ohio State, I think, started the year off a national championship year, two championships ago. And I think they started 3-3, finished 8-5, maybe. You just don't see it very often. And, you know, they had the fewest number of returning starters of any other team in the country. So they had five guys from that national title team that started games in 19. And the level of talent that went to the NFL, where you've got 16 guys in the league, 14 drafted, five of them in the first round. It's not easy to just plug and play. Oh, and by the way, you've got, we'll call it a at least a half of a new offensive coordinator, Joe Brady, now the offensive coordinator at Carolina with the Panthers. And then you got a new defensive coordinator, all new faces effectively on the rug, a new quarterback, a young quarterback now with the Finley kid. As a true freshman taking snaps, most likely, you just think, at what point in time was it reasonable to expect that this football team was going to be competitive in all their games? Nobody thought that they were going to get thumped the way they did versus Mississippi State, especially the way Mississippi State has proven to play the balance of their games. However, when you put it into context and you look at what they actually returned, other than the uniforms and the names, it's basically a brand new football team.
Game often comes down to whose quarterback plays better. What's your assessment of Felipe Franks and where he is at through the games he's played so far? Is this a guy that's maybe ready next year to take that step and play professional football and look at the draft, or is this a guy that could serve himself well with another year of college football from what you've seen to this point?
Yeah, I'll say this. There's no doubt that he's improved his draft stock. And we even heard a couple of games ago where, you know, NFL scouts were starting to take notice of the way that he's playing. You know, the guy's got, he's a great deep ball passer, and has been, has demonstrated that. His arm strength is pretty impressive. And you could hear guys that are in and around that position, assessing that position. They've often thought that how well he throws the football. Accuracy could have improved, and it has. I think he's completing 71% of his passes last four times out. The efficiency that he's playing with is impressive. Even in the Auburn game, you know, you could think, you know, around about the second half especially, that offense started to gain its footing versus what is still a pretty salty defensive unit. And he finds ways to make plays. And that's a big part of that position, where you just can't always draw it up to where it's going to win every time. you got a guy that can make you right after the ball is snapped. And I think that he's proven to do that with much greater consistency. There's no doubt it'd be fun, and selfishly, I'd love to see him come back for next year. And given the times that we find ourselves in, you have to wonder, you know, how has that evaluation changed for players as far as do I leave, do I stay? You know, what does the NFL look like? They conducted a draft, obviously, post-pandemic, post-COVID, and all that other. But the run-up to the draft wasn't impacted by it. And so you think, how does that change as far as how the league is going to go about evaluating players and how they'll even conduct their draft picks and evaluations preseason, how they're even capable of doing that? All that's got to be weighed in, I think, a player's decision. You know, but, you know, I don't have to worry about all that. I just, as far as watching games and covering games, love to see Felipe Franks in a Hogs uniform again next year.
Matt Stinchcomb, former Georgia Bulldog, and now an analyst at the SEC Network. Matt, we appreciate your insight this morning, and I know it's weird for you guys this season not traveling to games, but best of luck on the call tomorrow morning between the Razorbacks and the LSU Tigers.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
No, I don't feel good about COVID. You know, I think everybody's looking for an answer, and I'll give you the answer. We're going to play Saturday as of right now. We're going to play. We have a test that we took today that gets back tomorrow. I'm going to just tell you the truth. We're running thin, and we want to play the game, but you have to have adequate numbers to play the game, and we are thin. If we have a good test tomorrow, then by golly, we're going to play the game. We want to play the game. We have not talked to our players 1 second about not playing the game because we want to play the game. They want to play. And so as long as our numbers will allow us to play, that's what we're going to do. Are we thin? Yes.
Sam Pittman's comments beg the question, how thin are they? Who could be out? Who can't play because of either a positive COVID test or contract tracing? And I know I've gotten multiple messages already this morning for listeners. Hey, who's in, who's out, who's in, who's out? And we tell you that, and this sucks because it's just how it is. We tell you the same thing every week. We won't know until, 30 minutes or an hour to kick off, maybe a little prior to that. Is it 2 hours, Clay, when you're really getting that intel out there, when you're seeing people walk out on the field?
No, it's about, I'd say it's like an hour out.
Okay.
when you see the entire squad come out. You see filtered out, you know, you can pick out this player, that player, but there's some of them that don't even come out there for that little walk around.
Yeah.
So, and you have to be able to recognize faces because they're wearing sweats or something like that, or maybe a sports coat. So you have to be able to recognize faces and do some real knowledge of the team. And I can do that with some players, but there's some players I can't. When they come out with their jerseys on, then you know. So yep.
Yeah.
And it is contact tracing, not contract tracing.
That's a contract. Well, you just screwed it up too. So contact tracing, contact tracing. Clay, when I used to go to games with my grandpa, he would always bring his binoculars. And I know you, Matt Jones, Tom, and I'm forgetting who's. I know you said you, Scotty, Tom are in the press box for Whole Hog, Hogs Illustrated and Arkansas Democrat Gazette, but it is interesting. Like, I feel like binocular sales at Arkansas have gone up more than they ever have with so many people trying to pay attention to who's on that field.
I sit in my living room and look at my TV with them just to get it
just
right.
Just to get it right. So that was one of my grandpa's favorite traditions. And sometimes even mid-game, he would put them on just to be right in the action. But I always thought it was kind of funny, and he let me fiddle with them every once in a while. But now more than ever, they're versatile, and they're actually a really valuable item to have when you're trying, as you mentioned, Clay, to figure out and finagle who's suiting up and who's not.
I call them field glasses, but that's, you know.
I knew you were going to do that. I knew
yep.
it.
And
I knew it was coming.
That's all right. Some people call them something else, but I call them field glasses. And they do come in handy, and they're a tool of the trade and have been for as long as I can remember. I know that my dad didn't leave home without them, so you know, they've gotten pretty good. I've got a set of Nikons that I paid a nice penny for. I mean, that's what if you're going to have good field glasses, Nikon is what you want. I guess Bushnell are pretty good too, but yeah, they're a must. And you go to certain press boxes and you can't see the game without them. I mean, literally, the Texas A&M press box is so high you feel like you're about 10 stories up. If you don't have field glasses, you're not going to be able to see the game.
Tennessee, same way. There's some of these new end zones like Auburn where they seat you. It's corner
of the end zone. Yeah. I would be happy with the end zone. Yeah. It's corner of the end zone.
It's not ideal. So, but we will talk about this game. As far as Arkansas LSU is concerned, I just got a message from Justin on YouTube. He thinks Arkansas is going to win the game 38-20. Now, Clay, I mentioned I texted you last Saturday night that Arkansas was going to win 38-21, and I am definitely not as confident in that prediction as I was last week, based on just really, it's one singular reason, the COVID news that we've gotten continuously throughout the week. And when you hear something like that, and it's not, no pun intended, it's not a positive thing. It skews more negative. When you hear, even if it's not that like impactful, you just automatically assume, based on how 2020 has gone so far, that the football team is going to be hurt by this in terms of not many players are going to be out on the field relative to what they usually have in their arsenal.
I don't know how you think.
You know, they've had players out for COVID the whole year, and there have been some of them that I think, well, that's a blow. And the guys that I've heard that are out now, I think they can survive without them. I really do. I do not think it's going to be a death knell. But what we don't know is what they're going to get today. And it might be that they, you know, we'll know in about 2 hours, I think, whether they're going to play the game or not. And it could be two or three more players. It could be, you know, all you have to have is a couple of COVID tests. You have a couple that come back. Well, you eliminate that player probably plus his two roommates. And that's what happens with the contact tracing. Yeah. You know, it's the roommates are the ones that are gone. And that's what's happened in a couple of positions this week in the early test results.
Do you have a gut feeling or just a feel on this game tomorrow?
I think they're going to play the game.
You think they
will? Okay. At this point. Right. Yeah.
I mean, it all boils down to today. Like you said, we'll know. I mean, if you don't hear no news is good news in this case. So,
no question.
Yeah. So if you don't hear anything during halftime, I'd be really tuned in good to what Phil and Matty T and SmackDown have to say today.
Clay, and I appreciate you for teaching me this. I just received a text that I do not find great. So I'll leave it there as far as that goes.
But how do you know what text to believe and not to believe?
And that's the thing. It's so hard to determine what source is valid. And like Clay says, to double check on that. So I don't know at this point. It's hard to make a determination when it comes to that. So what are you going with?
I don't know. Again, you were talking about, someone said, I think Arkansas is going to win whatever it was you were at.
38-20.
I don't know how you think anything right now. I hope Arkansas is going to win whatever I told Clay last week. And right now, I'm just hoping. I don't know what to think till tomorrow. Till I, Clay doesn't have Twitter. So until I read Tom Murphy's tweets tomorrow and he tells me who's on the field, till I get a report, I don't know what to think at this point. Because I don't know how you formulate a real opinion about this game with the information we can solidify right now. But if Arkansas has, you know, 85% of the players we believe they'll have, I think they're going to be the better team and win the football game. But I think it's going to be closer than I thought it was a week ago. If they had all their players, I think Arkansas could win this game by 10 to 14 points.
Yeah, Clay, you mentioned you think it's going to be closer than it was if Arkansas, as Tommy mentioned, had all their games. But you still suspect that the Razorbacks will pull this one out.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, until until I hear that they're not playing. That's probably the way I'll feel.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll get to see some more of these players that haven't necessarily played a good allotment of minutes so far this season. I'm itching to see which guy can step up tomorrow, because we were speaking to a little earlier just some of the performances you've had, whether it's Matt Jones, Miracle on Markham, Casey Dick, Miracle on Markham 2, the Joe Adams pass from Ryan Mallett in 2010, the Darren McFadden 2007 performance, Alice Collins on the road in 2015, the defense stymieing that LSU offense and shutting them out in 2014. There's been historical performances of great magnitude for this football team. Can you have another one from either a player that you know and trust, like a Jalen Catalon, like a Treylon Burks, or will someone new step up tomorrow night? That is the question.
Yeah, this is the difference is, this is a game you should win. I mean, you're at home. The betting line, if you really lean on that as an indicator, is not, started in your favor. It's now 2 points that you're the underdog, but this is a game you should win.
I hope so. So Clay, I will. Phil is taking. He's taking our pass for the radio station tomorrow, so you'll run into him. I will not see tomorrow, but I do want to give a special shout out to my buddy Mitchell Spradlin, who hooked me up with the ticket for tomorrow's game. You're going to be cooking some breakfast tomorrow, aren't you?
I'm going to watch like I always do on the patio, and I'll be here
in the griddle.
I'm going to be on the post game show with SmackDown.
Excited about that. It's going to be a fun one, man. It's going to be quite a fun one. Yep. A lot of you tailgating tomorrow. This is a different vibe. You got some breakfast you can cook.
Yep.
You can cook an array of things tomorrow leading up to that game.
I just have an uneasiness and a nervousness, and maybe that's just the nature about me about the game. I'll just be glad when we get to about 1 or 2 o'clock today and I know we're going to play. I'm just a little on pins and needles about the game until that point.
That's probably a good way to look at it as far as that goes. Well, Clay, we appreciate you joining us as always on a Friday, buddy, and enjoy the game tomorrow.
Thank you. Look forward to the game. So, I'm hoping that there will be one.
Right? That's exactly how I feel. I think that's how everyone's feeling. Pins and needles on this point. You heard from Sam. When Sam Pittman looks frazzled, then I think the entire fan base, and not to say he's frazzled about competing against LSU, but you could tell just by the way he expressed yesterday that there is some concern with his voice. So I'll have you updated on halftime and Ruskin and Zach today, so make sure you're staying tuned to ESPN Arkansas 99.5 all day.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.